Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. With me today is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how's it going, buddy?
You know, normally your intros are a little wordier than that. I'm well. Cavs put up 38 points against the Pelicans and managed to, in the first quarter, but managed to give up 140 for the game. to lose their 11th straight. And all things are well in the world.
Yeah, that's one of those things where it's like, okay, two teams are scoring at that pace. One of them is the Cavs. One of those teams isn't going to keep up that pace. And guess what? It was the Cavs on the second night of a back-to-back. But we're not here to talk about the miserable Cavs because that's just a lot. So we have our friend of the podcast. I don't know if this is the first time you've been on since it's been rebranded as the Chase Down, James, but we got James Hollis, or you might know him better as Snotty Drippin', or from him blocking you on Twitter. James, how's it going today?
Oh, I think this is my first time on, and if all your listeners are people who are blocked, then you must have a pretty nice audience.
Yeah, we do. We don't.
You got to have like 3,000 or 4,000 people listening at a time, because I have a lot of people blocked.
I'm a muter, not a blocker. I like the quiet, like, satisfaction of, like, not knowing that, like, of just never having to think about them again, because they'll never know that I've blocked them or I've muted them. And there's kind of, I think there's a nice, there's a peace in that for me, but you're not a very peaceful person, Snotty.
That's not true at all. This season, I have been a pond. I've been a nice, calm pond, so... Don't let the my reputation might precede me, but no, I'm still a blocker. I want to erase that person. I'll never have to see them ever tweet again. So,
the one thing about the mute is now you see like that there is a reply, but you can't view what it is. And sometimes the curiosity just gets the better of me, and I'm like, oh, yeah. I want to figure out what that is.
That's a mute and block problem where you can only see like a quarter of a you only see bits and pieces of what looks like a nice juicy argument.
Yeah, or when all of a sudden there's a conversation going on, like, after your tweet and you only see, like, one person talking to himself. But, James, I think you're actually right. I don't recall you being particularly contentious at any point this season.
No, I haven't seen a single Snotty fight.
I think a big part of it is just that I'm just not that invested in this season. So I'm not on Twitter as much. And when I am on there, I just kind of I think a lot of those, the people who would maybe argue and want to say things to me are blocked already, you know? So
I just ran out of people.
I love that conceptually.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. A lot of them TM unfollowed or blocked a long time ago. So I don't deal with them. So
I actually find myself getting in basketball arguments a lot less recently too. I think Twitter broke me of my interest in that.
I think
honestly, I had too many bad ones that I was so put out by that. Like when I do see people arguing now, like when I see like Matt Moore and Sam arguing about Steph for the 76th time, I just think, why are you doing this to yourself?
And you know what? Honestly, it's not even, yeah, it's part of anything, right? It's growth and evolution. Just like in the NBA, right? A team that goes to the finals, cool, goes to the finals twice. That third time, it gets harder and harder because now you know how the game goes.
our Twitter arguments are just like going to the finals three.
It's like going to the finals, yeah. So now
I am the Cavs. I've been suffering. Four times in a row, and now I'm out of gas.
Yeah, I'm going through the disease of Moore on Twitter. So you know,
I'm the disease of Matt Moore. shout out to Woo! Matt.
We love you, Matt.
But James, I find it interesting. I definitely agree with you. And I think part of it too is we've all just been on for so long that it's like, why go through the motions anymore? Like I think we skip steps in when news breaks. It used to be there was like a day or two of jokes, then there'd be some backlash to the jokes and then the think pieces. Now we're getting like the think pieces immediately as news breaks.
If you're thinking about joking about this, here's why you shouldn't.
Exactly. So I think it's just the whole thing's very played out. But what I am interested in, because you mentioned that you're not as invested in the season, how much does that have to do with your Celtics? Because I find them to be one of the more compelling teams this season. They're still a team that come playoffs, I actually really believe in. I think Kyrie's taken a leap this year. We actually haven't really talked a whole lot about Kyrie on the podcast this season, but just his two-way play, his increased presence as a floor general, and the team in general just seems to be finding their strides. Where are you at right now with Boston?
I'm very pleased with Boston. That's the start kind of disillusioned me, right? I think, you know, this summer we all had, especially Celtics fans, we're pretty full of ourselves. And, you know, I think we all looked at the Celtics, what they did last year in the playoffs, thought, hey, add Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, who should be back to 100%, and boom, you got a super team almost. And obviously it wasn't that. You know, it started the season 10-10. They were very underwhelming early. And, you know, you could the jokes about Jason Tatum practicing with Kobe, you know, not even jokes, it really happened. Jaylen Brown was forcing things, you know, Rozier was struggling off the bench. They definitely – I keep saying it this way. It's like seeing a commercial for a really cool toy, and the toy looks awesome. But then when it shows up on your doorstep, it's you got to assemble it, and you got to have glue, and you got to, like, do some welding. And that's what it was like. The team was very, you know, some assembly was required. And now I think they're hitting their stride. And, like, tonight they beat a good, solid Indiana team. They beat the heck out of them.
You know, you're welcome for softening them up last night.
Yeah, exactly. A few body shots. Did you have a lot of toys growing up that required
building? I was about to say, I'm getting ready. I was thinking I was ready to, you know, maybe plunge into fatherhood the next couple of years. I don't even have my welding license.
I mean, but that's how bad Boston was earlier. You know,
yeah, it was hideous.
They looked really bad. And, you know, of course it was Ken Kyrie. Maybe my favorite was Spike Eskin doing the concern trolling. Hey, man, you know, the injuries really pile up, and Kyrie can't do the things he did before.
It is a funny thing that – have you noticed that no matter where the conversation goes with the Celtics, it still goes back to this anti-Kyrie thing. Like, even when I talk casually with, like, coworkers, like, when they were really struggling, it's like, I just don't think Kyrie's a leader. I'm like, I'm pretty sure Kyrie's the only one who's playing well.
I mean, it's we know this about the NBA and NBA Twitter and just social media in general. Reality takes maybe a season or two to catch up to perception. As far as, you know, Kyrie had his perception was he's a good scorer and doesn't do a lot of other things. That's very true. Last season, I thought he did other things. Maybe not consistently, but, you know, he tried. And it was obviously tried, but it still stayed with him. And, of course, so this year, even though he came out gangbusters as far as defensively and he's trying to be a better playmaker, and then once he caught fire after about the first 2-3 weeks, he was – I mean, Kyrie played – he's been playing at the top 8, top 10 player level, but it's still – his perception is, look, see, he's only a scorer.
Right. And I think part of it, too, last year was he had taken a step forward, but then he got hurt at the end of the year, and then they had that playoff run, which actually wasn't – like as impressive as it looked. Like, it was very impressive given the injuries that they had, but they went to overtime in game 7 against Milwaukee. They barely scraped by them.
Imagine going to game 7 in the first round and barely scraping by.
Well,
couldn't be us.
And then I was about to say, like, the loss to the Cavs, like, all things considered, the Cavs were playing just so horribly that they probably should have won. Like, they choked in game 7 and the Cavs were able to take advantage. But
earned a lot of equity by beating the hell out of the Sixers. I do think that's where we kind of gave them the
loss. Right. The fraudulent Sixers.
LeBron James is still LeBron James, dude. So, like,
oh, exactly.
Yes. How dare you?
No, we took advantage. You opened up the door for us and LeBron ran through it. But I think because of the way the season ended, all of a sudden it erased any goodwill that Kyrie had built up through the year. So it kind of reset, as you said, it takes a season or two for narratives to catch up. That kind of reset the clock back to zero. And I think a lot of people still are kind of missing out on the growth that he's had in his game.
I can agree with that because it definitely, the NBA definitely is out of sight, out of mind. And when he misses the last 30, you know, almost 40 games, and then Terry Rozier played well in his stead, and it's all of a sudden it's, you know, we saw it. Do they really need Curry? Do they really need the max Curry?
God, that was frustrating. Because guys, we've seen the kind of player that Terry Rozier is a billion times, and we all know how it works. It's like it was just Reggie Jackson. You know, like, those guys are fine.
Yeah. He's Colin Sexton.
Dude, Reggie Jackson on the Thunder was good. But he wasn't, like, a star on a starter lead ball handler on a championship team good. And we found that out when he got an opportunity elsewhere. Same thing with Rozier. He's a solid, you know, high volume bench point guard that can fill in a pinch. So, like, anyone who wanted to move Kyrie, very, very stupid.
Yeah, and of course now the thing is, you know, when they struggled early this season, they struggled. It was, man, they have too many good players.
Got the impression that they didn't have too many good players. It was like they had. I mean, my big thing, I remember we were talking to Alex Kungu before the season, and just kind of previewing the Celtics because I really liked this team and kind of what I thought they could be. But one of my concerns was they did have all these kind of similarly sized, similarly skilled players. And sometimes it is hard to have a hierarchy when everyone's roughly the same in terms of their skill sets, or at least in their perceived skill sets. Right. So, you know, like a guy like Jaylen Brown was going to take too many shots relative to what the team really needed from him. Because he's like, oh, they're putting their worst defender on me. I think I'm an all-star someday. I should go at this guy. And it didn't really work. And they didn't really have the offensive hierarchy, but it does seem like they're starting to settle into that, along with Marcus Morris just still being kind of outrageously better than he should be.
Marcus Morris is, I mean, I've never seen a guy go from just, you know, role, like, he's still just a role player, but he is a high end role player, and he's playing like a, you know.
Yeah, he matters. Like, he really matters. He
definitely matters. I think he's been the Celtics' second or – I said earlier, and people said, I think he's been their second best player as far as consistency.
I agree.
Production, no. Every night, both sides of the ball. When he's on the court, he's making good things happen, or he stopped the whole dribble, dribble, dribble thing, and he's just catching and shooting, and he's killing guys. So
I would imagine that going into this season, you probably thought that the Celtics were, you know, a favorite to at least make the Eastern Conference Finals. How did you see this team stacking up in the offseason? And have you changed that opinion at all?
Yes and no, because in the offseason I saw them. I said, Boston going to the finals. And then the Kawhi trade happened, and all right, made me think a little bit, but I said, there's just too much. Early on in the season, my faith wavered, and, you know, Kawhi and Kyle Lowry came out gangbusters. The Bucks came out gangbusters. They still don't really scare me. But I didn't know if Boston would reach that ceiling because I saw how bad Gordon Hayward looked. That was the real thing. Gordon Hayward looks – it's night and day to where he was at the beginning of the season to now. He looks like a different player. But I thought if he can't get it back, then, you know, that
– Man, a couple easy games against Maple Jordan and he's back.
But, and he looks really good tonight. You know, I think it was 5-5. He's moving a lot better, and his athleticism is coming back. You can just see his confidence coming back. So – my confidence wavered because of how good Toronto looked, and when Philly made the Jimmy Butler trade, it got me a little concerned too. But they looked kind of pedestrian too,
right?
So I say this about Philly: Philly is one Jimmy, Philly is one JJ Redick injury away, one JJ Redick injury away from being the Pelicans of the East, where they got three really good guys. Really good players at the top, and then the rest of scraps, and, you know, they lose a lot of games that they probably shouldn't lose.
Banking a lot on your boy Landry Shamet.
Man, the only difference is, do the Pelicans players hate each other, or is that just an exclusively Philly thing?
You think those guys hate each other?
I think there's an awkwardness.
I think at the very least, Ben Simmons and Embiid aren't that tight and don't really talk to one another from everything I've heard. And
Jimmy hates everyone.
Yeah, Jimmy apparently.
How do I feel about the Jimmy thing? Because he's never really – has he at any point been wrong?
Here's the thing. Well, no, here's my thing.
But I'd like to ask you first.
I was on Team Jimmy in Minnesota just because of, like, everything we've heard with Cat and Wiggins on just – them be more focused on their contracts and not really being kind of committed to the game, at least in the same way that he would expect from his teammates, especially when his whole goal was, okay, I'm going to force my way here, and I'm going to have these young guys that will help me kind of age gracefully, and we can be a contender. I don't think that's the issue in Philadelphia. Like, I think there's issues with roster construction, fit, things like that. But I think Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, I think that's a different caliber of player. And for Jimmy to once again be unhappy and complaining about his touches, or at least how he's getting his touches and things like that, I think it's starting to turn me a little bit on Butler when I was very, very pro him in Minnesota.
Where are you at on this, Snotty?
So I turned against him in Minnesota because there's a way to be a strong leader, and even if you're a jerk, you know, you can be an asshole and be a strong leader. And then there's also a way to be like a peacock, and that's what I get from him. I get from him that he's wearing the mantle of the Kobe mentality, Maverick kind of guy, but it's also because vanity's part of, I think, of being a pro athlete, but he takes it to another level. I think a lot with him, it's a lot of it's show. He does a lot of stuff for show.
Yeah.
He likes.
You mean having Rachel Nichols lined up the day of his tantrum?
It's funny because he
tried, orchestrated.
Yeah, absolutely. Because he said, "Oh yeah, I had that lined up weeks ago." But then I remember Rachel Nichols. She came out, you know, right after and says, "Oh yeah, I got a call. You know, hey, can
you?" She was in L.A. She had just landed in LAX. She said that on Low Pod.
So he says he had it lined up weeks prior. He just did this on the JJ Redick pod, you know?
Yeah.
So it's – come on. It's – so, and again, the other part of the issue with him is that he's closer to a Michael Finley than he is a Michael Jordan, but he wants to be treated like a Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
And that's
just, Brett Brown needs to text him the video of Draymond yelling to Paul Pierce, "You thought you was Kobe?" You're not that good, Jimmy. Like you're really good, but you're not like tier one can lead a team as the best player to a championship. Good.
Yeah, you know what's funny about the whole Jimmy thing is, like, you know, the big Jimmy defense, and I just mentioned it when I was setting up the discussion, which is, has he been wrong though? Like, the Bulls were shitty, and the Wolves young guys don't care. And the Sixers offense is ugly. It's like, dude, if you've worked anywhere in any professional environment, it's like so easy to shit on stuff and be right while you do it. It's actually not hard at all.
Because
every workplace has a lot of dumb shit that you just got to deal with or make better or whine about.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it just feels like he's just whining about shit he doesn't like at work.
It's not what you say, it's how you say it. Because like you said, you could say he was right, but what are you doing? You can't.
What is he accomplishing?
That's like, exactly, you know, what I'm saying.
Like, that's like the big thing is, like, I understand, like, you want to, like, agitate to make change, but it doesn't really appear like he wants to be a proactive part of that change, you know? And, like, that's being a good coworker. That's being someone who – that's how you kind of create a positive team environment and hopefully – get buy-in from everyone involved. It's like, you don't just say, I hate this. I hate that I don't get as much, you know, as many on the dribble touches. It's like, oh, well, how can we figure out how to feed everyone and make adjustments? You know, I bet Dwayne Wade didn't love playing off ball next to LeBron at first either.
Right.
Dwayne Wade is a lot better than Jimmy Butler will ever be.
What does Jimmy want? Like, is there a better situation out there for him? Like, does he want to go to Miami? Is that going to give him the competitive edge?
Do you think this is just the Warriors kind of skewing things? I remember Lo was talking about that on one of his podcasts recently, which is like, you know, like, because everyone on the Warriors from a basketball
perspective. That was actually open floor. I think
that was. Okay, either way, it's like, everyone fits so well together on the Warriors that that's almost the new expectations for, like, hey, we have 3-4 stars on this team. Wait, our skill sets don't perfectly complement one another? What the fuck? Like, that's not how it works most of the time. Most of the time, you got to be Kevin Love and you got to change your game. And it doesn't appear Jimmy's super interested in doing so.
So you think, are you saying that it's skewing it from the players' perspectives too?
Maybe a little,
right?
I'm developing the thought mid-sentence, so who's to say?
And it also might be just like they can't really fool themselves into thinking that it's going to be enough. Like, I think in the past, flawed
could
go through the year. Like, even Dallas, when they won, there were stretches in the middle of the year where, okay, the defense isn't good enough. But, you know, the team didn't necessarily fall apart, and they kind of pulled it together towards the end of the season. Now, like, the margin for error, even with the Warriors having all the issues that they've had, the margin for error is so slight just because of all of that talent, that if you're not fitting and you're not getting along well and you don't have a great supporting cast, like, you know that there is just mountains and mountains left to climb, and you're like, fuck this. Why am I going to play good soldier? Like, let me get mine. Let me put myself in position to get a contract this summer.
I mean, the reason should be that, like, Philly brought him in with the, you know, all the intentions of, we're going to give you your $190 million. Like, you're going to get your money, and then I think we all agree here. Golden State's going to look different next season, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's going to be gone. So, like, and then after the season after that, like, it's not going to last forever, which sounds very, like, you know, almost.
Well, defeated. Jimmy's retiring by 34, so he doesn't got forever.
You know what I'm saying? What is he doing, dude? Oh, I'm retired at 34. He wants to be young and rich and have fun, which is great. Absolutely. I would never say he's wrong to do that. But then, man, I don't know.
Is that like a him and Kyrie thing that they worked out together? Because both of them have been riding that train that they want to retire young.
Well, Kyrie wants to go lead a commune in, like, in Papua New Guinea. So I don't know if we really want to count Kyrie in this.
Well, I guess he's getting tips from Brad Stevens on how to lead a cult.
Here we go.
I do. Getting back to kind of how the Celtics measure up in the Eastern Conference, I do find this season a little interesting because the Warriors have taken, even though they've added some talent, they've taken a step back down to earth. Houston appears to kind of be blossoming into the team that we kind of expected them to be this season.
Real quick, the thing with Houston, watch for James Harden getting burned out. Because
of course,
he is doing some work right now, and it's only January, and let's see how long he can keep playing this level.
I think Houston is high key still fraudulent.
No, I'm with you there, but in terms of determining the second tier, I think we can move kind of Houston up into that. Whereas before, I thought it was just kind of, okay, you got the Warriors, then you got Toronto, Boston.
The four teams in the East.
Milwaukee, yeah. And you know what? Honestly, we should start being fair to Denver. We should probably.
I'm not super interested in being fair to Denver.
If we're going to include Philly, you kind of have
that's
to.
Fair. Right? Can we just drop Philly and Denver down to a third tier?
I'm okay with that. But James, going back to it, who is the measuring stick for you? Because I think Boston has all the talent it needs to make the finals. It's going to come down to chemistry and execution. But when you're looking at the Eastern Conference, is it Toronto that you kind of measure yourselves up against? Is it Milwaukee? Because, I mean, you look at the game tonight, Milwaukee versus Houston, and, like, those are some really goddamn good teams. And Milwaukee has just put together so many impressive wins over the Warriors, over the Raptors. Over the Rockets now, like, where do you think these teams kind of stack up in the conference?
As of right now, I got to say, so for the full season, I would say Toronto and Milwaukee, they've earned it. They're right there. They have the best record right now, I think, right? In the East and I think in the NBA. So, right. Milwaukee they've exceeded my expectations. I knew that Coach Bud would make a difference. I didn't know he'd make such a difference so fast. Like, he's really weaponizing Giannis's size, and he's turning Chris Middleton into a more volume shooter. So Toronto, then Milwaukee's right there. I still got Boston as third. Now, we're talking especially recently since Marcus Smart's been a starter on November 26th, mm-hmm. they have the best offense in the NBA. So for like a month and a half now, they've led the NBA in offensive rating. And again, they went 15-5 after a 10-10 start. So that's pretty good, man.
If I really challenged you, because you just listed the Celtics third, if I really challenged you to be honest in your heart of hearts, would you really put the Bucks above the Celtics? Because I kind of don't think you would.
I'm just saying from how they played so far.
Yeah, I'm talking if the playoffs. If you had to think how the playoffs went.
If we were saying the playoffs started right now and all the teams are healthy, I would still think I would give Boston the inside track right now. Over the Raptors as well, because I think the Raptors are starting to show a little bit that some of their issues. Even though they start off the gangbusters too, and they're still playing very well, but we do see that like Kyle Lowry's he's been kind of inconsistent, and I don't know if it's age. I don't know if he's just saving himself.
He's whatever. Old and short. Well, here's the tough thing. Combo.
I was about to say, I'm actually lower. Like I was high on Toronto coming in. I really think that if they don't make a trade by the deadline and add like either an all-star or borderline all-star talent,
really.
I think I'm going to be pretty out on them come playoffs because you look at them right now.
Let me step real quick and try to guess what you're going to say.
Okay.
A lot of their success is because Serge Ibaka is having a career year, and I don't know how long that holds up. Mm-hmm. And then their bench guys haven't been quite as impactful, and their starters have been so good, it kind of glosses over that. So even though the bench guys are starting to pick it up, It's still so heavily on Kawhi and Lowry's shoulders, and then Lowry himself is maybe starting to show cracks.
No, absolutely. I mean, Kyle Lowry, he's going to be 33 years old. He's about 5'10". He's got bad back issues, and that's not something that necessarily goes away during season. And I mean, a lot of his playoff shortcomings has been his body breaking down by the time that time of year comes around. And when you look at it right now, the on-off splits with Kyle Lowry are ridiculous. They can't seem to run the team if he's not on the floor. Even if he's struggling shooting, that offense does not get anything done. And their most impressive wins of the year have come fun. Like, I don't think this is an indictment on Kawhi at all, but they've come with Kawhi out of the lineup and Lowry going out there, and they blow out the Warriors in Golden State. They've had some impressive wins like that. They beat the Bucks.
There's no indictment. We just can't learn anything from it.
No, what I think it is the fact that Nick Nurse hasn't found a way to integrate a new offense, and kind of work Kawhi into that. And I just don't think that the offense is as sound as it has been in the past. I think they're more talented now, and that's why we're not seeing as much of a drop off. But I really think getting Dwayne Casey out of there, putting Nurse in, a rookie head coach in this situation where you basically have 1 year to sell Kawhi on the franchise. I don't think that they've done enough things to make a consistent offense that is going to be bulletproof in the playoffs when you're going against teams with a defensive capability that Milwaukee and Boston have. I don't believe in Kyle Lowry's back. And I mean, if you're Kawhi Leonard and you go into this summer and they haven't traded for a Bradley Beal or someone that's going to be part of the future, what makes you think that 33-year-old Kyle Lowry is the guy you want to be next to? Like,
yeah, I mean, I think that pressure
is toxic. Like, I it had an impact on the Cavs with LeBron. It has an impact any time a star is an unrestricted free agent.
Yeah, I get that.
AKA OKC with Paul George in last season, I think.
Right. And yeah. He was staying.
It's hard on players. Everyone gets tight buttholes when it's like, because I didn't make that three and now we lost and now he's going to leave and now we're going to suck. That shit is real. But let me play devil's advocate on the Raptors, because I think you guys are being just a little too hard on this year's team. I think the Lowry thing is a problem in the future. Like, I think anyone who's not really accounting for that is making a mistake, because he is going to be bad at basketball relatively soon. Just that's what the curve tells us.
Right.
But I think right now,
why do you think his back is going to get better this year? Like, that's something that's always an issue.
I'm saying they've been excellent even with his mediocre back this year. And the thing I like about the Raptors is they have so few core lineups that they run out that concede just about anything. You know, like you with the Bucks, if they want to play their five out, that means they have to play Brooke Lopez, who can get exploited on defense and on the boards. Like the Celtics, their core lineup, you know, with their five most talented guys, not their core lineup, I guess, but, with their original starting lineup, kind of gets pushed around, doesn't rebound particularly well. Stuff like that, where I do like the fact that the Raptors kind of – because remember, the last year's version of the Raptors, even as good as they were in the regular season, like their best lineups were like Lowry, Van Vliet, DeRozan. And it was like, well, that's not going to work against a good team in the playoffs. And we just knew it right away.
Right.
They don't have as many problems like that. I do worry about the top end talent, but for me, I'm actually more worried about Milwaukee in the postseason.
Really?
And maybe this is a result of the Cavs just absolutely fucking shredding Mike Budenholzer's defenses year after year. Mm-hmm. But he still plays that very conservative style that a good offense can just manipulate like crazy. You know,
they give up corner threes.
Give up corner threes, and their bigs drop so deep on every pick and roll, and good teams have guys who can shoot off the dribble. Kyrie's going to score 40 a game against that Bucks team if they just keep going at Brook Lopez and pick and roll. Like they're
yeah. So what they'll do is they'll just bring in Thon and go all arms and legs.
I just think they're a bend but don't
did
break.
You just say Thon Maker as a solution?
Yeah. Like that's like it's an imperfect solution is my point. Is. Like,
yeah. You're absolutely right. There's no
this Bucks, this Bucks defense is kind of built on this like, hey, you know, we're gonna bend but not break, but a good pull up shooter is enough to break this shit. And I'd just be worried about it if I were a fan of the Bucks. Like it, I think the offense is going to stay elite, but defensively, I think they might just get shredded.
Well, my only thing with the playoffs with the Bucks versus why I think Toronto would have a bigger advantage is because Giannis is awesome. Chris Middleton's really, really good, and he, yep. You know, he's shown. But it's still, we know. When it comes to the playoffs, it's all about it's star power kind of matters more in the playoffs, right? And Giannis and his lack of a jumper will be – it's not going to be a problem, but, you know, that's – it's an issue. If you can't shoot really in the playoffs, it's a different ball game. He's going to score a lot. He's going to take a lot of shots. With Kawhi and Kyle Lowry, unless we're just saying that, you know, Kyle's not going to be effective in the playoffs, Kawhi is one of those kind of guys where he can – you know, we've seen it. He's a top three, top four player, and he can break a defense.
I underrate Kawhi sometimes because of the lack of flash, I think. Like when I think about like playoff impact.
Right.
It's so easy to imagine Giannis taking over playoff games and not as easy to imagine Kawhi.
Yeah.
And I think I to some extent do that with Kawhi. Like I sort of underrate how fucking good he's been in the postseason.
I think that's an easy trap to fall into.
Yeah, so I for those reasons, I still think the East goes through Toronto, and I kind of just want to see the Celtics be uber elite for maybe a little while longer. I was pretty torn between the two teams on who was going to make it, just about everyone else. But I do think it kind of those two are even in their own mini tier above Milwaukee, though not a full tier.
Yeah, I agree with that. Because even though I was, you know, when you asked me the question, it was about what we've seen so far. But yeah, if we're talking about when the playoffs start. Toronto, you know, their guys have some experience and they're young and they're athletic and they got some versatility there. So yeah, Toronto. Now I don't know. I just feel like the full stink of that. I know it sucks.
No, you're right. You're right.
Dude, I kind of don't. I think they're over it. I think DeRozan was a big part of that loser mentality, man.
I still think.
Remember his fucking quotes that if we had LeBron, we would have won too.
Yeah,
like,
but you know what?
Out of your mindset is helpful. I mean, Lowry did walk off though.
Yeah, I mean, Lowry has quit multiple times. Like he quit in the middle of a game, and then came back, and then in 2017 he quit to protect his contract. Raptors fans, good Lord, are you guys forgiven for that? I still think it goes a little deeper than that. I mean, Serge Ibaka hasn't been great in playoffs either. He's going to need to be a big factor to them.
Do we buy Indy?
No. They're nice, but no.
Yeah, they're a fun bunch story.
They're kind of like the Celtics last year.
There you go. Like, they're the tryhards.
Bunch of tryhards. Like, do the things that make you not want to play them, like that they're super uber pressure on ball defense. We're like, God damn it, I was just like trying to run a little thing. Like we're running some off ball action. I'm just supposed to dribble at the top of the court while we run a flare screen. Can you get off my ass? Like, that's playing the Pacers, I feel.
Yes. But yeah, you don't have to be chest to chest with me during the timeout, bro. Just go ahead,
like,
back on.
Can you just chill? And, like, you win games that way. But I still, like, I don't see a route for them to score at a particularly high level in the postseason against a good defense.
I mean, let's go again to tonight. I know it's one game, it's a small snapshot, but without Miles Turner. But, yeah, the Celtics basically just crowded Victor Oladipo, and they made a lot of shots. And, like, no one else – sure, Sabonis had 20 points, and that was basically it. You know, the rest of the team
– they just have, like, seven competent passers and none that are, like, particularly – I think they're a bunch of 6.5 out of 10 ball movers. And, like, that's nice, but, like, sometimes you need, like, Oladipo to be an 8. Like, when you hard trap him, like, he needs to find the skip pass, not the closest pass, and right. He just doesn't really have that vision. And that's where, with a team that has the ball in his hands as often as they do, like, he needs to be able to, like, make those passes to completely destabilize a defense when the trap comes. And I just haven't seen that from him yet.
Well, and they also need Miles Turner to be a actual, like, star, and he's not. That's the thing, right? Because right now, again, we've seen the one-star thing. And with LeBron, it worked. LeBron was LeBron. And with other guys, like Dwayne Wade, it worked because Dwayne was Wade. But Debo is really good. He's not one of those players, you know?
Yeah.
He's not honest. He's really good. He's just not – he needs more help. He needs more help from guys. And right now, Miles Turner is just a really good role player and hasn't turned into that kind of star caliber guy they need.
And I thought that contract was just fantastic when they signed him to it. And then – this season, he just hasn't shown kind of the growth that I anticipated. And I mean, there's a pretty
good. I don't know. I think he's been okay.
I'm not saying, I mean, he wasn't bad before. That's why I thought the contract was good. He just hasn't taken a leap. I mean, you could probably make a pretty compelling argument that Sabonis has been better than him this year.
Right before he's hurt now, I think. And I think before he got hurt, he was making a really big defensive impact. Yeah, he's missed the last two games with I don't even know how he got hurt, but yeah, he defensively he'd been really good for them, and that's where he becomes the antithesis of Sabonis. Sabonis is great; it's better offensively, but it's still not, you know, he's not bad at least in the post defensively. While Turner can possibly be one of those backbone anchors of a really good defense. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know who I just love as an NBA player and, like, have just always really enjoyed his game, even though he's not particularly great at anything, is Darren Collison. I just like watching him play. I feel like he's one of those, like, unsung, like, probably better as a really good backup. Like, remember absolutely when he backed up CP3 in New Orleans?
He's like Terry Rozier 1.0. He's like the original Terry Rozier.
But just like a little more not problematic. An asshole to play with. And a little more problematic, yeah.
Why is he problematic? What do you do?
Look it up after. Issue.
what?
Oop. He had a DV issue.
A little DV issue.
Derek Carlson did?
Yeah. Not great.
That's right.
Kind of forgot about that.
I'm here to remind you guys of that and make things uncomfortable.
Just bringing it down. Speaking of making things uncomfortable.
Giannis hitting Harden in the ball in the face with that ball killed me. I want to get your thoughts on the MVP race, James, because
last thing I want to say about Miles Turner right before he got hurt. Last 11 games he was before the 8-point game he was averaging about 17 points, 9 rebounds, 3 blocks a game, it was plus 7, so he was kind of picking it up a little bit.
That is pretty good.
Suck it, Justin.
You know what? That actually makes for a cleaner transition than what I was clumsily trying to do, so I'm okay with it. We're at the time of year. We're at the halfway mark where now we're going to start looking into games too much. We're going to start talking MVP. And tonight kind of kicked that off because you had Giannis versus Harden, who I think everybody kind of agrees is the front runners right now. I think we put a little too much stock into these individual matchups in terms of whoever wins has the is in the driver's seat for MVP. Personally, I still think Giannis would be my vote. As crazy as what Harden's doing right now, Giannis has just been doing it all season, and he's got that two-way impact. And plus, I just want to give it to someone that's a little more enjoyable to watch. Where do you fall on this, James?
I think Giannis would be my front runner right now, too. And as good as Harden has been, absolutely, like, breathtaking lately. And we talk about Harden, how he's, you know, the foul drawing and stuff, and it does suck. And he took, what, 27 free throws the other night, whatever, 23 free throws the other night. That's, that kind of stuff is annoying. But lately, he's actually been, like, just showing us that I'm shooting threes. Like, he was shooting 17 threes a game for, like, the past, like, four or five games recently. And he's, like, so he's scoring. He's just scoring buckets. But that's only right now. And like you said, for the full season, it's definitely Giannis has been the guy, I think. Harden has definitely shot his way up the rankings, right? Because they were just out of the playoffs a few weeks ago, and now they're right there, I think, close to like fourth or fifth back in the West, and Harden's been out of his mind. So, yeah, he's shot up the rankings, and he's doing things. I said this the other day. It's like he's trying to break basketball. You know, he's giving the analytics crowd everything they want. He's shooting better from three than from two. He's bombing away from three at a ridiculous level.
Mm-hmm.
He's unstoppable. So it's weird to watch because it's fun. It's fun watching him make Jamal Murray, you know, kiss his feet when he falls down.
No, that was very hurtful, James. Don't bring that up.
He's one of your guys. He's one of your boys.
One of his.
He's one of them. TM.
That is one of my gripes with the MVP stuff with Harden, though, is that. Like, a big part of the recent noise is that the Rockets were so shitty to start the year. And I'm not interested in giving an MVP. I'm not interested in giving someone the MVP just because they were the preseason MVP at the Spearmint Rhino and played their way into shape to have to save their season. Where Giannis has just been like prime Shaq offensively somehow all year for the best team in the league. Like, I don't even get how it's a conversation right now. And I understand how good Harden's been recently, but it's like Giannis has been consistently unreal. Their point differential is like double anyone else in the league. No-brainer to me.
I'm an asshole, so this shit take shouldn't really surprise you guys. But like part of why I wouldn't want to give it to Harden if people were ever stupid enough to give me a vote is like I know how badly he wants it. And I don't want him to get it for that reason. Like
I just can't shake like two-time MVP James Harden.
Right.
Like, Harden, right? Yeah, that's crazy.
Something LeBron pacing himself in the regular season and Durant going to Golden State did something to the MVP award I just don't care about it anymore. Because I know none of the three best players in the league are going to win.
But also Harden, like, he goes all out in the regular season and he burns out in the playoffs. Like, we know this.
But we just know he's not in the tier. Like, it used to be, like, the MVP, at least for most of my, like, adult basketball fan life, because I don't like counting anything that happened when I was, like, 15 because I was a moron. In the last, like, 12 to 15 years, I would say, like, the MVP is normally, we all pretty much agree, is like the best player or like close to the best player. And I don't really think anyone thinks James Harden's a top three player or Russ was a top three player.
Derrick Rose ruined the MVP. Yeah, I agree.
I think we all realize how much now it's more about narrative and numbers.
Yeah, it just doesn't. But it becoming so obviously about narrative and numbers as opposed to like, it used to be like, he's the best player and also his team was pretty good. But like now that doesn't work because the Warriors situation is so weird and LeBron doesn't give a shit. So it's like this weird trio, weird series of things where it's like, I just don't think the MVP matters anymore. Worth mentioning the stupid NBA awards where they don't announce for like till 3 months after the season ends.
That's another big thing. So let's take a full circle right back to the beginning of it. It's almost like the Twitter arguments and stuff because, like, I think we are now so steeped and we're kind of like we've learned the rhythm of the season and how things go. That I'm just saying I don't care. I don't like over on Dunktail's part. I don't want to talk the MVP because it doesn't matter because we're gonna talk about it now. It'll be something totally different in a few months. Watch what's gonna happen. Harden's gonna start. Chris Paul's gonna come back. Harden's gonna slow down. Some other player is gonna either take off. Like LeBron's gonna come back and go nuts and. It's very much what have you done for me lately, even with the MVP. So whoever ends the season the strongest is like, oh, this guy's the MVP now. That's what Russ did. Russ was kind of most early in the season. He took off, you know, late. He had a lot of clutch shots and had that narrative going for him. And he finished off the season strong. And that won him the MVP.
I remember, so I used to produce at a sports network. And my least favorite segment was, is X in the MVP conversation? Who gives a fuck if you don't think they're gonna win? Yeah.
So it's like Paul George right now. He's playing great. He's playing great. He's in MVP conversation. Is he fifth? Is he sixth? Does it matter?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
He's not one or one. I don't care.
Let's just give him Defensive Player of the Year, and I'm good with that.
Nice pat on the shoulder.
Yeah.
We'll move on.
Before we wrap this up, James, are the Lakers going to, speaking of apathy this season, are the Lakers going to get anyone that makes them worth caring about this season, or do you think they're just going to ride this out?
Well, the Lakers picked Lonzo Ball over D'Angelo Russell, and D'Angelo Russell has been playing out of his mind. They picked they picked Ingram or Kuzma over or whoever, because they didn't even try to get Julius Randle back. He's averaging like 21-9, for like half the season now in Pelican land.
Right.
So I don't know. I want to say they could have traded for Paul George. They decided not to, and look what happened. I don't know if Magic and Pelinka are really pulling all the right strings, and we'll see. We'll see what happens this summer, because I don't think during the season that I can get anybody.
You know what's funny, James, is that I remember I was doing similar concern trolling about the Celtics like 2 years ago, like oh man, are they going to cash this shit in at any point ever? Or are they just going to keep drafting guys? And it turns out just keeping drafting guys worked for you guys. But the difference is the Lakers don't have any more help coming.
Right.
Like in the draft, like in the natural way, like they got to go get someone.
They have to. And I don't see what's Lonzo Ball and Kuzma going to really get you. So, right. I mean, yeah.
It's so funny because, I mean, we all know that the Cavs are incredibly fortunate that LeBron James happened to have been born close to Cleveland. But, I mean, the Lakers, when you're talking about, because this has been like a hot topic on Twitter recently about, oh, do the Cavs deserve another top pick in the draft? Or before it was, oh, did they deserve to have LeBron come back? Like, what did the Lakers do? Like, they're close to film studios. That's it. Like, yes, the Cavs whiffed on a couple picks, but at least they had a few that you had Kyrie, you had Tristan Thompson, who was essential to 2016. And then the picks that didn't exactly go well, they traded Dion for basically an entire supporting cast in Mozgov, Shumpert, and J.R. Smith. They traded Wiggins and Bennett. They sold high on their kind of underwhelming small forward version of Brandon Ingram while they had the chance before he cratered his value and got Kevin Love. Like, draft picks are lottery tickets, but you have to recognize what they are and not just always hope for the best case scenario. I mean, the true incompetence isn't drafting Deion Waiters, maxing him, Pat Riley.
Dude, no one is more weirdly in their feeling. It's like one of the more weird subplots that only I think Cavs fans know about because no one else could possibly give a shit. But like, Heat media is just still so bitter about everything.
I do.
It's like they hate the Cavs so much, and it's just great because it's just like, we suck. We're not worried about you.
We're not worth your hate.
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing? Why are you so mad at us?
I did not know there was still beef between Heat media comes at the Cavs still, huh?
Yeah, they just like hate the organization. I think
you know what? I did see my guy say that today when he was like, "Are we saying that do the Cavs deserve another?" I did see that.
Yeah, it's just
George Sedano. I love
and we love Sedano, but it's
Sedano. You're my guy, baby.
It is like it is region wide. There's just this general like we can't. I think there's like a I can't believe the Heat in like Heat culture and Pat Riley lost LeBron to these fucking morons.
I think that's the thing. You spend a little too much time around Pat Riley and you get that indoctrinated.
There's a superiority complex that is not particularly well earned.
Right.
It's so crazy that such a mediocre team would have a superiority.
That's kind of my thing, man. Don't get me started on railing on Riley.
Dude, last season, I think the Heat fans were one of the main ones in my mentions because I said, man, they finished the season like ridiculously strong the year before. I don't know if they can keep that up. Well, you obviously don't understand. You don't know.
Heat culture.
Great this year. You obviously didn't watch. I did watch. They went like 38 and 4 down the stretch. That's not sustainable, guys.
Yeah, yeah. Deion Waiters once averaged like 28 points down the in yeah, the like, last 2 guys. Months of the season with the Cavs. Like, no one's trying anymore, guys.
Yeah, yeah. And even I said, hey, guys, you guys average all that with, you know, your season in the last year. Waiters was averaging like 25 a game. You think that's sustainable? Why not? I said, all right, brother.
And they were snorting heat culture. Deion was snorting eat culture.
There you go.
Yeah, that team is just hot garbage. Talk about who deserves things. Max out Kelly Olynyk and Hassan Whiteside again.
And like, I think the argument against the Cavs is just that they got so many picks. But like, if you're talking about deserves in terms of like recently, it's like
anything.
It's not. Yeah, well, exactly.
It's a lottery for the shittiest teams in the league.
Exactly. You're at the you have high lottery odds because you suck. The Cavs weren't even trying to suck, really. I mean, they extended Kevin Love and then he broke his foot in preseason. Like, they sold off vets. Like, that's what everyone says you should do. You shouldn't be in the middle. You shouldn't be mediocre. And then you look at the other teams at the bottom, like Chicago, New York, Washington.
Incompetent. Yeah,
Phoenix. Like, okay, I get it. But, like, it's not like the Cavs are any more or less incompetent than those teams.
You know, the best way to phrase it is imagine spending the year of our Lord 2019 being jealous of the Cleveland Cavaliers. There are so many better ways to focus your energy. So many teams that are so much more worthy of your envy.
Plus, the damn lottery odds are flat for the millions. Yeah, even,
and we're gonna they're gonna have the fifth pick. It's fine. Yeah,
exactly. I've rented.
We're gonna ride into the sunset with whoever the fuck. Cam Reddish.
Exactly. Kevin Porter Jr. time.
Kevin Porter Jr. That's the name I wanted to buy blank.
Bull and his busted ass foot. That's what's going to happen. All right.
Rest easy, George.
And on that depressing note, let's wrap this up. James, this was long overdue. Really appreciate you coming on and giving us your time. Before we go, plug your stuff. Let people know where they can find you.
You can find me almost nowhere because I've been a bum this year.
You're getting swole. That's what you've been.
I actually have been. Spent a lot of time in the gym and then out and about socializing with the lady.
Yikes.
Hey, attaboy.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, Justin never sounds more like he's pitching a pyramid scheme than when he tells someone to pitch their stuff.
All right, guys. Okay. Now we're going to just welcome James up to the stage. James, tell us about how you got to where you got.
All you got to do, you invest $300. And I swear to you, in a year and a half, you'll make quadruple that. Okay. So, I'm over at lineups.com where I do a podcast with your boy, Oliver Maroney.
My guy,
Oliver.
Yep. I try to call it the Lock and Trail Pod. They call it the Lock and Go Pod. I don't like that, but whatever. Then, of course, I got my boy Joe Borelli that we do the Dunk Tales Pod. Check us out there at Joe Borelli. Check my guy out. And that's about it, man. That's it.
And follow you at Snotty Drippin.
Follow me at Snotty Drippin on Twitter. And you'll see it's like pictures of my dog and when I go out with my friend. And I do talk basketball, but just not as much. It's, you know what? I've mellowed as I've Twitter aged.
Haven't we all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Except Justin.
I'm less awful, I think. Maybe.
Absolutely. You are.
Maybe wrap the pod.
I became less awful, and all I have is this damn shirt.
I'll say you threw out an excellent troll the other day.
The Clarkson one from today was great.
I didn't see that one, but which one? He got people pissed. Like, oh, you're still. Oh, the 3-1 one. It was the Steph Curry hit the 3 on his jersey at 13.
I thought that was innocent. Steph went to
sex, but people got mad. No one engenders more like violent hate than Justin for marginally like cheeky tweets.
But no, you understand it's because for years when they did have LeBron, you guys were insufferable bastards.
Well, it's like I think they thought Justin would stop. And he did.
And he has stopped. So that was nothing. But
no, he hasn't stopped. I think it's actually way easier to talk shit when I'm not invested in my own team's product.
Well, you don't care about your team and you talk shit. But the point is now, when he does it, now it's like, well, now your team sucks. We're going to come at you even harder. You know what I'm saying? Justin doesn't care.
I want creative comebacks. Like, I don't want, oh, the Cavs are irrelevant. Man, I fucking know I cover this team.
Yeah, well, I waste so much time on this stupid team. But yeah, you're one today comparing Clarkson and Kuzma's per 36s.
And then, you know what?
And then saying if we include our point guard that can't shoot, we might be able to trade for Anthony Davis. Nice. Too good.
Man, the per game is basically identical. I just went with the per 36 because it would make it look a little. Because
Clarkson looks better.
Yeah.
he absolutely looks better. This is cruel.
We figure out a way to get Dame and Brow together. That's what we need to figure out somewhere.
If you listen to Clutch Sports, it's gonna be in Los Angeles. But yeah,
we did a real good job of wrapping up this podcast.
Yeah, well done, boys. It's probably not my fault at all.
No, it's me. It's me. I kept blindsiding you guys with other bullshit. That was me.
No, I mean that's basically what we live for. So thanks again, James. I want to thank our listeners as well. You guys have been awesome with your support. I remember the best way to support the podcast is by subscribing. You don't even have to listen, just subscribe. It'll cook those numbers, it'll count the accounting metrics. So we would really appreciate that. And if you want to go a step further, you can leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, really cook those numbers. And if you want to be part of our Discord chat, when you leave a review for the podcast, take a little screenshot of that, email it to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we will send you a link to the Discord chat. So thanks again to James. Thanks to our listeners. Until next time, go Cavs.